This is episode number 665 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in our news segment, we're going to talk about Archie canceling their Kickstarter, as well as my review of last month's subscription box for Four Color Grails. Our reviews this week will be Ant-Man number 5 and Silver Surfer number 11. Our BoobTube and Big Screen Bonanza is going to be all about the Flash season finale this week. And finally, our creator spotlight is Mr. Mark Waid, who Matt sat down with at New York Comic Fest last year to talk about all of the things that I didn't talk about when I interviewed him a day earlier.
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know.
It's fun though, isn't it?
Is not considered kids. That's a game.
Bond. James Bond.
I am your father.
Good day, mate. Let's put another shrimp on the barbie.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Take your sticky paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
And welcome everybody to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry. Here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring, and it just dawned on me that you're wearing your Flash shirt.
Yes.
Because we're going to be talking about the Flash today, and as much as I can't wait to talk about it, we do have to wait a few minutes.
I know.
To get into talking about the Flash. But I'm also very excited about our creator spotlight this week because, you know, when you interview people, I don't hear the interview all the time.
Yep.
There are times where I might be standing next to you and you're interviewing someone, but for the most part, I hear the interview fully for the first time when I edit it. And so I sat down this week and realized that while we had aired the interview that I did with Mark Waid at New York Comic Fest last year, we hadn't interviewed yours yet. Yep. And it's been long enough now where it seems appropriate to sort of bring him back on as a guest, if you will, and have that interview. And it was awesome because it's such a great bookend to the conversation that I had with him. And it also reaffirms everything that I love about Mark Waid, because he's awesome to talk to and he's a great guy and he's super enthusiastic. And it was awesome to hear you have a wonderful interview with him, because now at this time last year, we were talking about how he was on our short list of people that
you're right.
We hadn't talked about, you know, we hadn't got on the show yet, and he's someone we both wanted to talk to. And now it's come full circle where we've had two great interviews with him. So I'm very excited for people to hear that, because he is someone who, again, I sort of follow wherever he goes and whatever he does. And that's probably a good segue into our news segment, because Mark Waid is writing the new Archie series with the revamp and relaunch of Archie Comics.
Yep.
However, what we heard this week, right after we recorded,
right after I put up my news story,
because we recorded last week and said, hey, Archie Comics is doing a Kickstarter and we don't understand what everybody's all upset about.
Yep.
This is really exciting because they're going to launch all of these other books with Archie and it's going to be awesome. There was three other series that they were saying were going to launch sort of alongside this new Archie comic. And the whole purpose of doing the Kickstarter was to get enough money up front to be able to launch those series now, as opposed to being able to launch the core book and then having to wait a while
before they could stagger the
other series in their releases, because there was so much excitement about the new Archie.
Mm.
And so no sooner had they put their Kickstarter up, then immediately there was a backlash. Why is Archie doing a Kickstarter?
They're millionaires.
They're a big company. Why do they have to do this? And I think a lot of it, as you and I, that upset you and I,
yep.
you know, obviously, because we know a lot of great people over at Archie.
Yep.
And we also know that they're not as big of a company as a lot of people do think that they are. And it was really unfortunate to see them try to do something again that was sort of taking things in a different direction, you know, going against the grain, and they just got swallowed up in the backlash about it.
Yeah.
The real unfortunate part, however, is that their response to that was to cancel the Kickstarter. And I have the statement that CEO John Goldwater had put out about that, and I'm just going to read that, and then we could talk about it real quick. He said, we will be ending the Archie Kickstarter today. We launched the new Riverdale Kickstarter as a unique and innovative way to celebrate the company's upcoming 75th anniversary and to bring attention to some new titles that we are extremely excited about. Jughead by Chip Zdarsky, Betty and Veronica by Adam Hughes, and Life with Kevin by Dan Parent and Jay Bone. We decided to dive into crowdfunding as an energetic, interactive, and different method to raise money to help expedite the launch of these titles. The chance to engage with our fans directly was really appealing to us, and we're extremely grateful and honored by the support and pledges we've received. While the response to these new titles has been amazing, the reaction to an established brand like Archie crowdfunding has not been. Though we saw this as an innovative, progressive, and outside-the-box way to fund the accelerated schedule we wanted to produce these books, it became another conversation leading us further away from the purpose of this whole campaign, to get these amazing books into the hands of fans faster than we could have done on our own. While we fully expected our goal to be funded, it was no longer about the books and how amazing they'll be. We don't want that. This is why we're shutting the Kickstarter down today. We don't regret trying something new. It's what Archie's been about for the last 6 years. We will continue to be a fearless, risk-taking, and vibrant brand that will do its best to embrace new platforms, technology, and ways to interact with fans. As a company, we have always prided ourselves on pushing boundaries and challenging expectations and perceptions. The wonderful new Riverdale titles we wanted to launch will still come out, albeit not as quickly as we would have hoped had we attained the funding via Kickstarter. We believe in these books, and we know they'll find an audience in comic shops fueled by great stories and amazing creators. We'd like to thank the great team at Kickstarter for their guidance and feedback, and the entire staff at Archie Comics for their endless hours of hard work and dedication to this very special initiative. And most importantly, to our fans that pledged money to this Kickstarter, we thank you. Your dedication, love of Archie, and his friends, and endless positivity are examples to all. We will be in contact shortly via Kickstarter to get a special thank you gift in your hands as soon as possible. Your support means the world to us.
Wow.
So, I mean, first of all, that's a very well said statement.
Yep.
And pretty much covers, I think, what the sentiment was behind putting up the campaign in the first place, which was, we've got a lot of positive vibes coming around this new launch. Why don't we try to get these other series that we already have planned out on the table quicker so that they can all sort of be part of the same wave of momentum? It's unfortunate that it seems like a lot of people missed the point with that.
Yep.
And this is, again, one of those situations where the internet and certain aspects of the comic reading community can really ruin something for everybody else.
Yeah. And the thing that really bothers me the most about this whole thing, and you and I are, you know, our emotions and our feelings are in the last show and the story I did for the website. We were excited about this because it was something challenging, something new, something unique, not to mention the fact that we could have Betty and Veronica drawn by Adam Hughes. Okay. There's number one right there. I was also excited in the fact that I was going to get one of my favorite characters, Kevin Keller, back by his creator, Dan Parent, and having Jay Bone helping out. So I'm like, this is win-win. This is perfect. And I love the fact that they were looking at this as a grassroots kind of thing. They weren't looking at it, you know, hey, we get to interact with our fans, our people that pledge get some cool stuff. And it seemed like the people that whined and complained the most are the people that are so far away from Archie to begin with. They don't care. The people that I saw, I read a few comments from, you know, some people, and I'm like, you know what? That was just out of negativity. You don't read Archie. I had somebody that was a little nasty about it that sent a portfolio to Archie a little while back. Why would you do that? Because you know what? You can't play both ends of that. You're either for or against. You need to see the big picture. And to be a internet, I don't want to say troll because that's the wrong word, but when you're the internet angry guys and angry girls, you have to be angry all the time. You can't pick and choose. You can't say, oh, I'll be angry at these guys, but I'm still going to send them my portfolio.
Here's my thing. Who cares?
Yeah.
If Marvel wants to do a Kickstarter, DC wants to do a Kickstarter, if Dark Horse wants to do a Kickstarter, there are movie companies doing Kickstarter. The freaking Veronica Mars movie just came out of that. If Joss Whedon came out tomorrow and said, I'm going to kickstart a new season of Buffy the Vampire Slayer,
he'll have
even
more
though
money.
Joss Whedon has $1 billion from working on the Avengers movie,
and
people would fund that in a second.
In a minute.
This week, because they're mad at Joss Whedon, but next week when they're not mad at Joss Whedon anymore, they would fund that in a second. And so it seems so silly to me. And I think you're, I think the thing that you are 100% correct on is that I did not hear or see diehard Archie fans coming out and saying that they were blown away by this in a negative way.
Nope.
It was the people on the periphery who don't even read Archie books or have a passing interest in Archie, who clearly don't understand the size of Archie as a company and the situation that they're in, who were part of the mob mentality that ultimately led them to cancel this.
Yeah.
Who are you to decide who Kickstarter is for?
Yes.
Kickstarter is a crowdfunding platform that anyone can use. It's not up to you to say who can and can't use it, okay? If it's up to anybody, it's up to the people that created the platform.
Yes.
So if Kickstarter says to Archie Comics, yeah, you can do a Kickstarter, who the heck are you to say that they can't do a Kickstarter?
Yep.
Let the market decide that. If people funded that, then clearly there was a demand for that.
Mm-hmm.
If people didn't fund it, then clearly there wasn't enough support for it. That's the whole purpose of that. There will either be enough people to fund it or there won't. Why wouldn't you just let the process play out and decide for itself? If people didn't think that that was something that should be done, they wouldn't have pledged money to it. Clearly, there were a lot of people who were going to support that Kickstarter and had already pledged money to that Kickstarter to the point where Archie felt like it would have been funded.
Yeah.
So there was support for it, and they had to give all that support back. And who does that hurt at the end of the day? I mean, it hurts the creators because there's no guarantee, even though Archie says they're planning on it, that those books come out, you know? And it hurts the people who wanted to read those books now.
Yes.
So I guess that's a victory for the people that made Archie come to the decision that they had to take that down.
Yeah.
Go you.
Congratulations. Yes. You just punched a redheaded teenager right in the face.
Yes. Great. You took down the mighty Archie. And you took down the evil corporation that is Archie Comics and made them not give us comics sooner.
Yeah.
Pat yourselves on the back. Great job.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you and I have known those guys for so long. And the closer we have gotten, but we know people at Marvel. We know people at DC.
Dude, these are the types of things that make me want to quit the internet.
Yes.
Just like.
Yeah.
I won.
You know, you saw. How many people actually saw that announcement and went, yes, I told them. I told them they shouldn't do it.
Right.
You know, who said that I had the right to do a Kickstarter? You know, who has the right to tell Jimmy Palmiotti he can't do a Kickstarter?
If DC comes out next week and says, we're going to kickstart a Commandy series.
Oh, absolutely.
If we get $200,000, we will do a 12-issue Commandy series with these two particular creators. First of all, get funded in about 5 minutes.
Yep.
And second of all, you wouldn't have that type of backlash.
Yeah, and if you did have that backlash...
And if you did, you'd have just as many people justifying it and rationalizing why that's okay. So that's my whole thing is, again, and to go back to what you said, you got to be careful what you take a stand against as, you know, the principle of the matter and all that stuff, because next week it's going to be the thing that you love that no one else cares about that is coming back, and then someone's going to squash your dream when that happens.
Yeah.
And so, and then you kind of got to toe the same line.
Yeah. And you know, Mike Pellerito is one of our dearest friends, and we love Mike to death. And all I can picture is him just being like, what did I just do?
I could just picture those guys sitting at their desk, like just looking at the screen and reading the comments and being like, what just happened?
Did we kill somebody?
Right.
Because we have now taken the ire of the world. And, you know, and I understand why, you know, you and I were talking a little bit earlier. We kind of wish that Archie saw this all the way through because we don't want the idiots to win.
I do. I really do wish that they would have gone ahead. Now, when John Goldwater says, We didn't like that the conversation went away from the books and became about this. I completely understand that. That is a very valid, that's very valid reasoning for wanting to get away with this. You don't want those books to come out with some sort of negative stigma because people are still complaining about the way that they happened or something like
considering
that.
Considering it's family entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want that. And I respect Archie enough that, you know, as mad as I was that they stopped, I was more happy in the fact that they were respectful enough of their brand name to say, you know what? We may fight for what we want, but we're not going to fight people just because they're angry at us. And
I'm just going to say this. If Lee Horsley comes out of retirement to fund a new season of Matt Houston and you people wreck it for me,
you're dead meat.
There will be hell to pay. Okay?
Oh, man.
You don't get to say who does a Kickstarter.
Is he even still – I mean, what has he done? Has he done anything? I would love to see what this guy looks like now.
Here's a better question. Does he have to, Matthew? He did Matt Houston.
Yep.
He doesn't have to do anything else.
Oh, with Pamela Helmsley.
He can hang up his 10-gallon hat and call it a day.
Yep.
Because he gave me a piece of my childhood.
You see that mustache? Case closed.
I mean, we can do a whole podcast on mustaches because that's a whole different thing. But yes. So yeah, we're trying to end it on a positive note, but that was a real bummer, man.
Yep.
Real bummer. And
it was.
And I hope at some point we get to talk to Mike about that. I would love to hear their perspective a few months out when this has kind of all settled. And then we're talking about how awesome the new Archie books are and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's just, man, no good deed goes unpunished,
no,
I guess.
And
it's,
you know, my other thought with Mike was, I pictured Mike going online going, I'm going to check the baseball scores and then getting just punched in the face. And all he wanted to do was see how the Yankees did.
Right. Yep. Tough day. Tough day that day. Anyway, let's talk about something positive, Matthew. Four Color Grails. Now, you might remember in, I think it was mid-April, I did a quick write-up on the Secret Identity website about a new subscription service. Now, there's a lot of people out there, I'm sure, that listen to the show that do probably Loot Crate.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a billion other crates out there. In fact, for my wife's birthday, I got her this like organic snack crate thing that she could get like five of them, order whatever you want, and they throw it in. Like, there's something for everyone.
Was that
there
that healthy one that they do on the sports radio?
Probably. There, but they have like horror themed ones now. They have retro video game themed ones now. And so the cool thing about that is with the rise of these sort of loot crate type things over the past few years, there's now sort of a flavor for everyone. And Four Color Grails is a subscription service for people who like to collect variant issues, variant covers. And so it's kind of cool. What they do every month is they go out and they get four exclusive variant covers to issues, current issues of comic books, and they package them up and they send them to you at your home. And if you go to the article that I posted on Secret Identity, they sent me the April box.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of took pictures of all the packaging and stuff like that. Very nice presentation. It's like a slipcase type of box that comes in the cardboard box on the outside, but inside, nice slipcase box. And then it's got like the faux velvet when you open it up that your four issues sort of rest in. And in this month's one, there was the Secret Wars preview thing as well. So there was five things in there. But the variant covers were awesome. So this month, it was Secret Wars number one with a Stan Lee variant cover that had Stan Lee and Spider-Man on it.
Nice.
You had a Bloodshot Reborn variant cover, number one. You had Rick and Morty from Oni Press after the Cartoon Network Adult Swim show, number one. And you had Archie versus Predator, number one.
Nice.
So those were the four books. So you've got some pretty big hitters in there. So these are a variety of different publishers that are involved in this, a variety of different creators, and some really top-notch covers. The subscription price for it, I think, is $29.95 for 1 month, or if you do a 3 month thing, it's like $26.95 or something like that. And you can actually go back and buy previous ones while they last for more than what the monthly price is. But if you're someone who collects variant covers, this is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Because the only people getting these covers are the ones that are actually subscribing to the service. And my initial thought when they launched Four Color Grails was, I'll be interested to see what publishers they get on board for this. And when you've got Secret Wars number one in your April box, okay.
That's not bad.
And when you've got a pretty awesome Archie versus Predator cover in your first box, in your month's box, that's pretty awesome. So you still have time to get in on the May box. And if you go to the website, which is fourcolorgorillas.com, and I'll put a link in the show notes, you can see the timer click down of how long you have to get in on this month's box. And then it, the timer clicks over to the next month. So pretty cool. If you're a comic collector who likes collecting variant covers, the other thing that I found really cool about it is when you flip the issue over, the back cover is white with a Four Color Grails logo on the bottom. So you could get a sketch on the back of it. So you've got exclusive cover on the front, potential sketch cover on the back of it. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Very cool.
And yeah, I'll put links to that stuff in the show notes, but that was up on the website as well this week. And that is your news. So we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some comic books.
Now, just because you buy your books online doesn't mean you have to sacrifice the comic store experience. Now, many of us don't live close enough to a shop to call our own, and that's where DCBS can help you. Not only do they offer incredible discounts, but Discount Comic Book Service has the giveaways like Free Comic Book Day and Power Rings. And in the slightest chance that you have a problem with your order, DCBS is fast to make sure you're satisfied and very happy. So join the many Secret Identity listeners who have made the switch by going to www.dcbservice.com and tell them you heard it here at Secret Identity.
And we are back to talk about comic books, and we got a couple of Marvel books today to talk about. You were going to start us off with a series that I have not been reading, but you have been enjoying. That is Ant-Man.
Yeah, and I think what is going on for me is once Secret Wars started to really amp up and Captain America Falcon was not tickling my fancy, I started to look at other things, and all of a sudden Ant-Man comes out, Howard the Duck comes out. I sadly got away from Silver Surfer, but it was a lot of these Marvel Fringe books were the things that were grabbing me, and Ant-Man by far has been the best one. Now, Nick Spencer's writing it, and I've loved his writing since I first met him when he was doing Morning Glories. The rest of the creative team I'm going to have to find because once ago, there we go. So Nick Spencer's the writer. Ramon Rosanas is the artist. Jordan Boyd, the colorist. Travis Lanham is the letterer. And Odette Wynecore is the designer of this one. Now, what is going on is that you have a villain that needed a heart to kind of come back to life because he was dying. And it was a son that was perpetuating this whole plan. I don't want my dad to die. So we need to get a heart. And the heart that they decided was going to be Cassie's, who was is the young daughter of Ant-Man. And
she was a young Avenger too, wasn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, she's a young girl in this one. Now her mother has moved her to Florida to avoid any of this crap from going on because you know what? Your Ant-Man's daughter, and somehow she gets caught up in all this stuff. So we're gonna move to Florida. You just stay up north and work for your Stark Industries thing. He got a job doing security there and ended up quitting because he wanted to be with his daughter. So he went down south. He was doing some consulting with Rhino, I believe is who it was. But all of a sudden things started, not Rhino, it was a guy in a bear suit, I think. I got to find out who these people were. But he latched on with like some D, E, and F listing villains. And as this is going on, yeah, it's a guy in a bear suit. And some robot that is just a mess. And he's down there and he realizes that his daughter is in trouble. They have taken her heart and given it to this villain. And Ant-Man goes down there. But as he gets in there, this villain is awake, alive, and just kicking the crap out of Ant-Man before he can do anything. And then his son comes in and is like, oh, Dad, I'm so glad to have you back. And, you know, I'm so happy. And all of a sudden he's like, wait a minute. How did I get here? Whose heart did you use? Did you use Ant-Man's? And he goes, no, we used this girl's. And he goes, oh, really? That's great because, I want the girl and I want Ant-Man to see me destroy this girl. So as he is going in to kill her, Ant-Man jumps up, saves the day a little, you know, fights this guy. And, as the fight is going on, he calls up a bunch of bugs. The bugs, looks like flying ants. And I forget, in Florida, you've got all sorts of crazy ants to take.
Fire ants,
man. Oh, my gosh. You got some nutty ones.
Fire ants.
So what he does is he covers this guy in ants, which is about the biggest fear I could have.
Did you want to tell your story again?
Should I?
For the uninitiated.
Okay, so when I was about 5 or 6, we stayed over at my grandparents. Went into the pantry to get cereal. I opened up a box of Frankenberry that was probably in there for 3 or 4 years. As I tipped the box, it was full of ants who had gorged on the cereal. As they're pouring out into the bowl, I'm freaking out. And as they're the ones that aren't pouring into the bowl are now crawling up my arm. And then I passed out.
Mm-hmm.
And then woke up 3 hours later, like Wizard of Oz. Where was I? on this long couch that my grandparents had.
That's some trauma right there.
And I'm terrified of ants to this day.
I don't blame you. That is a story that would terrify me off ants forever.
Yeah. So as the fight goes down, Scott is realizing that his daughter may not make it. And they give her another heart. But the because it was such a quick surgery, they couldn't give her any of the, you know, drugs that you would give when you give somebody a I forgot what they call them, but when you give a transplant to somebody, you need to give somebody medication so the body can react to it right, and
so it doesn't reject it.
Yeah, anti-rejection drugs. So they didn't have time to do this. So what Ant-Man does is he goes into his daughter's body and sits there and literally fights every single antibody that is coming to fight and take out the heart. He's taking them all out, and as he's in there, it's a really touching moment because you're seeing him holding her when she was born. You're seeing when she was sick and how he turned to a life of crime just to pay for these surgeries. And he's doing all these things and is realizing he's lived his entire life for his daughter. So 3 hours later, she's at the hospital, and then the mother comes in and is saying, you know, where is she? What happened? He goes, look, I'm really sorry about this. I know that I did this and I put her at risk. And so it tells the doctor comes in and says, you know what? Your husband saved her life. And granted, this bad thing happened. But, you know, she also was suffering from a very serious infection that all of a sudden your husband went into her body and saved. And if there's anything that you need to take out of this, is that your husband loves his daughter. And she goes and they have kind of a quiet moment. And she goes, you know, I blame you for everything that happened to Cassie, bad. And I'm want you to know that whatever happens, I support you. And if you want to be her father, I will not get in your way. And then he looks at her and she goes, you know, you've always been her hero. And if I have a problem, it's mostly because I'm jealous of that. So after the moment, he says, you know, he's basically quoting Sting's free, free, set them free. Says that, you know what, I'm going to leave her here. I'm going to go back to New York. And I am going to let them go and let them have a normal life. And I'll still be part of Cassie's life, but I'm going to let them have a moment. Now, this issue ends. And the great thing, too, is that this issue always had a letters page in it. So you got some crazy, awesome, fun letters in here. And as this issue winds down it's a no longer to be continued. It's an end. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, we just had 5 awesome issues. But it looks like we're going to have an Ant-Man annual in July. So we're going to have 5 awesome issues and an annual. Hopefully that'll keep it going and bring it back. I hope the movie does well enough to carry this on, but this also got me fired up for the movie even more.
Well, and I'm going to talk about another Marvel book that came to an end, at least for now, and that is Silver Surfer number 11. Dan Slott, Mike Allred, Laura Allred.
Yes.
This series has been great. It's basically Dan's take on Doctor Who with Don Greenwood, who is his companion as he goes through the cosmos. And where the story's at when we pick up is in this issue, the way it's presented is crazy. It's basically like Groundhog Day. So what has happened is a couple issues ago, they came upon a planet, Dawn and Silver Surfer did, that was full of people who their planets were destroyed by Galactus. So when Silver Surfer shows up on this planet, he is like the devil himself showing up on this planet. And they're basically like, oh, great, the apocalypse is here.
Yeah, he's back.
Here's the guy that delivered us to Galactus. And he realizes that all of these people that were displaced when their planets were eaten by Galactus, he's responsible for their lot in life now. And so when Dawn found out just what his life was like when he was a herald in those early days where he had essentially probably killed millions of people in his duty to Galactus, she was horrified. Mm. And kind of wanted to have nothing to do with him. And so as that storyline kind of worked itself out, Silver Surfer essentially said to these people, you are all my responsibility now. And there's like 6 billion of them or something like that. I have to find you a new place to live. That is going to be my goal in life until it happens. I'm now responsible for you guys. I will find you a place to be. And until I do that, I'm not leaving your side. So he has been leading this fleet of ships through space looking for a planet for them to inhabit. And everyone that they've come to so far, because there's so many different races and things like that, it has been not a good fit for somebody. Mm-hmm. So they're essentially looking for the perfect planet.
An empty planet, almost.
Because they get to one planet, and for most people, it's fine, but some people, the atmosphere makes them sick.
Yeah.
Okay, we got to move on. And they keep having to do that. And you're seeing the toll that that's taking, not only on the surfer, but on some of the leadership of this fleet, because people are starting to get ideas about, well, maybe if we just took the sick people and got rid of them, then the rest of us could find a planet to inhabit. And so you're seeing that that's starting to sort of eat up a little bit of some of the leadership of this team. Meanwhile, Surfer, this is weighing heavily on him because he hasn't been able to find them a place to live yet. And now they're entering into different realms of space where they're getting attacked every day, you know, and he's having to defend the fleet, and they lose a couple ships here or there, and he has to fight them all the next day and things like that. Meanwhile, Dawn is still kind of not talking to him. She's still kind of disgusted with this person that he used to be and really doesn't want to have anything to do with him, but doesn't really know how to talk to him about it. And so he's feeling that too. So he's going out there feeling like nobody's believing in him, fighting these guys every day, trying to find a place for people to live. And it just kind of, it keeps happening every single day. And he comes up with this idea, you know, with my cosmic power, I might be able to bend space and time to get us somewhere new, to get us to the place that we need to be. I'm going to try and do that. But in doing that, he sort of creates this loop of the same thing happening over and over again. And the way that this is drawn, and I'm going to show it to you, Matt, is that there are some parts of the page that are upside down.
Wow, yeah.
And the whole thing flows in like an infinity sign. And it folds in on itself. And so what you're seeing is scenes play themselves over and over again. Like, they'll come out of like a wormhole, and they'll get into an area of space where they're getting attacked, and then they'll fight them off, and they'll look for a planet, but it's not a good match. And then the same thing will happen over again. And it's like they don't even realize that they're now in this sort of time loop. And the person who is watching all of this happen is this cosmic entity called the Never Queen. And she's sort of narrating this. She's outside of time and space, and she's kind of narrating the fact that he's got to break free of this, or they're just going to be stuck in this infinite loop. And the whole kind of message as it goes along is that he has to, if he doesn't believe that he can do this, if he doesn't believe that he can find this place and get them free of this loop that they're in, then nothing else matters. He's the one who has to rely on himself to be able to do this. And so it's kind of sad in some ways, because so much of who he is now and what he's trying to do is wrapped up in what Dawn thinks of him. Did she lose faith in him? How does she feel about him? And there's a part in this book where he realizes, like, I can't worry about that anymore. I can't worry if these people are mad at me. I can't worry about if Dawn doesn't believe in me now or something like that. I have to understand that I can do this. I have to believe in myself. I have to make this happen. And so it's that sort of empowering moment where he finally is able to break free of this loop that they've been in and gets them to a new area of the cosmos where they end up coming upon a planet that works for everybody in just sort of in the nick of time. Because like I said, the crew of this fleet was starting to kind of have some bad thoughts about how they were going to maybe let some of them go in order to get to a place that worked for most of them. And things were starting to fall apart, and he ends up finding them a place that is going to work for all of them, because the atmosphere is adaptable. And so it will adapt to meet the needs of all of these different species that are coming to this particular planet. And so everybody's rejoicing, everybody's there. But as the book winds down, you still have this awkward sort of thing hanging between him and Dawn. And he's saying, you know, the first part of my plan was to obviously find these people a place to live. But I also said when that was done, I would take you home. So I'm leaving it up to you now. What do you want to do? Do you want me to take you home, or do you want to continue with me out here and whatever our next adventure is? And that's the way the book ends. Mm. And so it sort of ends with a cliffhanger of, does Dawn stay? Does Dawn go? Are there future adventures to be had, or will she end up going back home to her normal life? And I don't know what the plan for Silver Surfer is after Secret Wars is done, but if we only got 11 issues of this, it was a good series. You know, it was an interesting take on the character. I like the idea of him doing his take on Doctor Who. Of course, Mike and Laura Allred, yeah, matching with Dan Slott's sort of adventurous writing style, I think perfect match. Mm-hmm. I think this was a really fun series. It ended on kind of a melancholy note. I'd like to see, maybe whether it's in an annual or some sort of a wrap up, some kind of resolution here, but the fact that they didn't do that tells me that there is plans for Silver Surfer on the other end of Secret Wars. So it was an interesting series so far, and it was a lot of fun. I have a code for this book, and again, this is a $5 book because it was an oversized issue. So if you go to marvel.com/redeem and you enter the following code first, you will get a copy of this, a digital copy of this issue. The code is FMCIV9BHYK99. If you go to marvel.com/redeem and you enter that code first, you will get a digital copy of Silver Surfer number 11, which was a very interesting issue. And when you see the way it's presented, it must have been very difficult for Mike and Laura to lay out, because it really is very, I would expect nothing less from this creative team. Like, yeah, it certainly fits with the feel of this series, but it was quite the final issue for sure.
It's funny when you think about a team, like, I believe this is the first time that the three of them have worked together. How has it taken this long?
I know.
Because you have a writer that completely understands Mike and Laura's art. Mike and
Can
Laura.
Can I make a suggestion for their next series?
Oh, I'd like to hear it.
Great Lakes Avengers.
Yeah.
Great Lakes Avengers bring Squirrel Girl back into the fold. Although her, the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl series is outstanding.
Yeah.
And I love it. But I would love to see Slott and the Allreds take on the Great Lakes Avengers in like a 12-issue series and have some room to breathe instead of just these one-shots that we get every 5 or 6 years or something. I think a lot of fun could be had with that.
Like Ecstatics was. That was a great series. The Atomics, all those things.
Yep.
Good stuff.
So there you go. That's your comics for this week. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the Flash season finale.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.
And we are back to talk about The Flash. Now, I could talk about Mad Max and how it was one of the greatest experiences I've ever had in a theater, but you haven't seen it yet.
Not yet.
And I need to process this, so I'm not even going to try and do it on my own. Go see this movie. I will say that to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
If you... I feel like if you are a writer, a musician, an artist, if you are in any way, if you like to make things, this movie will be a revelation to you.
Really?
Because it is so well made, and so the world that has been created in that movie is so well realized. It's hard to even think of other movies that did it like that. I feel like Peter Jackson in the first Lord of the Rings trilogy brought that world to life in a way, but this is not someone else's world. This is George Miller's world.
Yeah.
And the way that this world was brought to life is stunning.
Mm.
It is one of the most inspiring pieces of art that I've ever experienced. So go watch that movie.
Very nice.
Now, to something that I loved almost as much. Let's talk about the season finale of The Flash. And before we do, let us just say that The Flash has been one of the finest first seasons of television ever.
I put that up with there with Serenity right now. I put that up with David Tennant's season with Catherine Tate as the most enjoyable anything I have ever seen on TV. And when you talk about, if you said best episode, I think the best episode was the last one I watched. I mean, there's been a couple that have been B minuses maybe, but that's a B minus.
It's not always perfect.
Yes.
But what it has, and I always compare it to the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, it has heart.
Mm-hmm.
And it has such heart, and it does such a good job of conveying the hope that Barry Allen brings and the heart that Barry Allen brings, that even when it's not perfect, it's still great.
Yeah.
And last night's episode was one that for 45 minutes, it was all about heart.
Yeah.
Because the action doesn't even happen until the last maybe 5 minutes of the show, 10 minutes tops.
And in the action, as cool as the action is, it's two or three little points in that action that send you right over the edge.
Which is kind of a bold choice for a season finale, because usually in a season finale, it's action, action, action. Yeah. It's all the big set pieces. And there were those in this, but this was nowhere near as action heavy as many of the episodes that we've seen over the course of this season. Now, that didn't disappoint me at all.
Not at all.
Because the moments that it built to were gut-wrenching, but also so perfect.
Yeah.
Like, so you have, so at the end of the last episode, he captures Harrison Wells.
Yes.
He captures Eobard Thawn. The Reverse Flash is now captured and being held at Star Labs. This episode, he's like Hannibal Lecter. He's in his little cell, and he's getting into the minds of everyone there, including Barry, when he says to him at the beginning of the episode, I can give you what you want.
Yeah.
I can give you your mother back.
Spoiler alerts, by the way, because it's going to be...
If you've listened to an episode of this show ever in the history of the world, then you know all we do is spoil everything.
Yeah, because there, to me, in this particular episode, there were things in there that shocked me.
Yes.
But this whole thing with...
There was at least two moments that it shocked me, for sure.
And for me, the two...
Three moments that shocked me.
I had two moments that shocked me, and they were about 3 minutes apart.
Yeah, they're all in the back end of the episode. So, but it's all billed for the first 45 minutes. You have Wells saying to Barry, I can give you what you want.
Yep.
And the awesome thing is all the theories that we've had and all the why does Wells need him to do this? In the first 5 minutes, he explains everything.
Yeah.
This is exactly why I did everything that I did. This is exactly why I needed you to become the Flash. This is exactly what needs to happen for me to go home. It was awesome. It was like the explanation that we've all been piecing together over the course of the season. The only thing he didn't explain and you didn't get a lot of details on is what happened in the future that made him hate Barry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that piece, he didn't get into details about, but like the, this is why I've been here for so long. This is why I needed you to become the Flash. I had to create you because I needed you to go back home and all this other kind of stuff.
Like it was the thing that in that one moment where it was like that double thing in there is that he, and this is what drove my wife insane, is that he's saying to Barry, I came back to kill you, but then I realized if I killed you, I can't get back to the future. So and that's why he took him out as a kid.
Yep.
Took him, you know, he let him take him out of the room and save him so he could become the Flash. You see all this stuff going on, but Barry is forced to make the decision of, it starts with, do I risk not being the Flash anymore to go back and save my mother, because I won't become the Flash. Things will change.
Not being the Flash, not living with Joe and Iris.
Joe was his father and Iris. Then it turned into, oh, by the way, this could create a wormhole and destroy everything.
Sure.
So now he's got all this stuff. And he still, the thing with his
and
mother.
And maybe kill you.
Yeah. And the thing, and send your worst enemy back to the future so he can come back maybe and do something even worse. He decides to do it. The thing was, and this is what ripped me apart. This was the first of the really emotional things, was he sees Joe and he says, Joe, what do I do? He goes, you need to go back and save your mother. And he goes, but then I won't be your father. You won't be my dad. And he's like, but you'll have what you want. And that's a mother and a father and you'll have your life. Then he goes and sees his father and his father says, you don't change a thing. You are the man
that
you're supposed to be. This is why things happen.
John Wesley Shipp.
Oh,
has he not nailed every single performance as Barry's father from the start of this season? Like, the first time we ever saw him, it was like, you get teary-eyed because you're like, that's the Flash,
that's
and
TV
now he's playing
Flash.
The Flash's dad. Like, very certainly nostalgic and everything else, but he has absolutely nailed every single scene that he's had. And again, in a episode full of gut-wrenching scenes, he has the second best scene in the entire episode. His conversation with Barry, you're right. If you change things, you're going to change who you are and why you are the person that you are. And someday you're going to have kids and you're going to realize just exactly how much I love you and am proud of you and stuff like that. So as a father who is sitting there watching this show with his 8-year-old son, I'm freaking bawling next to him watching it.
Yeah.
And it was just unbelievable. Like, super, super powerful. Other nuggets that we get is we finally get the reveal that Cisco is going to become Vibe.
Yeah. Oh, before we do that, though, really quick, on that last note with him asking everybody, I think the thing that got me the most emotional, and I'll probably get emotional thinking about it now, and I don't remember if he was talking to Iris. Iris was the last person I think he spoke to about this whole thing. Or was it? No, it was when he went back and talked to Joe.
Again,
And he was sitting on the cosmic treadmill, and he's looking at Joe, and he goes, I just want somebody to tell me what to do. Freaking killed me because he is the Flash. He has got all these awesome things, but he's still a kid.
Yep.
And he doesn't know. He is so torn as to what to do. And I sat there and I remember when that happened, I saw the corner of my eye, my wife look at me and I'm like, that's usually what happens before it starts. And I just started tearing up because it was like, I felt his frustration. I could feel how just desperate he was. Because he didn't know what to do.
Yeah, Grant Gustin, he gets glossed over a lot because there's so many other great performances, but pretty much everybody was fantastic in the episode. Yep. So you get Cisco finding out that he's, obviously they don't say Vibe, there, but you find out that he was affected by the night with the
that
particle accelerator.
He can see different, when you're saying parallel universes, I'm like.
He remembers them.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting because that's not his power in the comic books.
No.
But that's a pretty cool power.
Yep.
If he can see what happens in alternate dimensions. And so that was pretty cool. And then the way that Wells just kind of rubbed it in his face and said, remember who gave that to you.
Yeah.
Just like that. Tom Cavanaugh has done such a great job with Harrison Wells. Awesome. I'm kind of bummed that he's not going to be on the show because I do really like him.
He was on, I first discovered him on, Modern Family was when I saw him.
For me, it was Ed. Ed's one of my favorite all-time shows. Love it. So that stuff all happens. You get the only thing that was kind of glossed over really quick was the Ronnie and Caitlin wedding.
It's like, here it is.
That kind of happens against the backdrop of maybe the world ending.
Yep.
So I get it. But they just didn't have enough time to cram everything in. And so that was kind of done really quickly. Very interesting scene with Professor Stein and Eddie, where Professor Stein basically says to Eddie, you're the only one out of the whole group of people here that has the ability to make their own destiny.
Yeah.
Like, you keep saying how you don't matter in history. All that means is that you're not predestined to do one thing.
Yep.
You can do whatever you want. You can change your destiny, which was awesome.
Yep.
An awesome conversation that they had there. A great revelation for Eddie. And to me, finally did that character some justice.
Yes.
Because if there's one character that has kind of gotten short shrift over the course of this season, it's probably Eddie. He's just been the guy who is in the way of Barry being with Iris.
Yep.
And then when he found out that he didn't even matter, he's kind of been the mopey guy for the past couple episodes. So this was a big episode for him.
Yeah, and the whole fact that he was like, his whole thing was, why bother? Because I saw the headline. Wells showed me the headline that the byline was by Iris West Allen. So I don't get the girl. He goes, I don't save the day and I don't get the girl. And then when Professor Stein says, you were in that room when he was playing head games with all of us. Why do you think that that's real?
He says, I have a cup that says I'm the best boss in the world.
Boss.
And I think my assistant would agree with that. So yeah, that was great. That whole way that scene evolved was great. And so, but ultimately he decides to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So Barry is going to do this. He has to get in the particle accelerator. He has to run really fast. Then they're going to drop a particle in there that he's going to collide with. It's going to create a wormhole. He will have 1 minute and 52 seconds, which I thought was pretty funny, to go back and change that situation. And at the same time, Wells will be able to leave by going in a time bubble. That he mentions Rip Hunter
was the
first one who created, which I thought was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have his speed powers. So he's going to use that to get back home. And because this all needs to take place in a small amount of time, Barry will not have the opportunity to save his mother and stop Wells.
Yeah.
So the way he's designed this whole thing from the start is that he has to make a choice. So Barry's going to go back. They do the whole speed thing. He gives him the run, Barry, run one more time.
Yeah.
They open up the wormhole. And then Barry starts seeing the multiverse. He starts seeing his own past and stuff like that. Yep. But also, I want to go back and slow-mo that because I know there's got to be like, you saw the Legends of Tomorrow gang.
Yep.
In one of those, I know there's Easter eggs all over that, and it just happens so fast that you don't get to see them all, but you know that they're in there. So we can dissect that over the coming months. And then he goes back to the past.
Yeah.
And man, that couple of moments is, even though you kind of knew, like you kind of had an inkling of what was going to happen, the way it was executed, I thought, was perfect.
Yeah, Barry ends up in his room, his childhood room, and he's looking at like the fish tank and everything, the planets. And as he hears the commotion going on in the living room, he hears young Barry yell, "Mom!" And he opens the door slowly to see everything going on. But then he sees his older self in sort of that classic Flash uniform.
Yeah.
Kind of look at him and like wave him off, like, "Don't come out here."
He waved him off as in, don't do what you're here to do. And that was like brutal, because then he closes the door and he hears his mother.
And he waits for the end.
Yeah.
And yeah.
That was brutal. So everything else plays out the way that it did, except for the fact that now he knows his mother is dying. And he opens the door and he comes out and sees her.
Yep.
And he has a moment to say goodbye to his mother, which I'm not even going to recap what he said because I'll start crying here on the show. But I'll just say it was absolutely perfect.
Dad,
it couldn't possibly have been.
What?
It couldn't possibly have been more well done than it was. Yep. Her emotions, his emotions, beautiful scene. Absolutely heart-wrenching, but also wonderful at the same time, because he gets to go back and he gets to tell his mom that everything worked out okay. Like, unbelievable, amazing, gut-wrenching scene.
And then the insanity.
And then the craziness. Yes. Because now after that happens, you have Wells, who gets in his little time bubble, and he's going to head out and win the day, except as that starts to happen, Barry comes flying through the wormhole, literally explodes the time bubble and knocks Harrison Wells to the ground, shattering his chance of going back home. So if he didn't hate Barry with a fiery passion before,
he did now.
You can feel that too. You can feel Wells realize that he basically just stranded me here again. There's now no way I'll ever get back.
Yeah. I think the moment in that was when Harrison Wells is like on his hands and knees in the wreckage of the time bubble, and he looks at him and he goes, "What did you just do?"
Yep.
Like, "You just broke a vase. You just broke something that your parents told you not to play with, and you broke it." And you saw the desperation. And then all of a sudden they suit up and they start having a punch up, which is going all over the place. Now I'm trying to think. So the fight was going on, but then an object gets spit out of the vortex. Which to me was it's like, okay, I'm done. Yep. I can't handle any more of this.
As soon as that happened, I just went, "Holy crap." And my son goes, "What?"
Yeah.
I said, "That's Jay Garrick's helmet."
That is Jay Garrick's, the original Earth 2 Golden Age
Flash. Which then prompted the, "Who's Jay Garrick?" Which again, as I said before, even though I'm not a DC historian, like, the Flash is my favorite DC hero. So being able to watch this show and with my 8-year-old son and have these conversations like over the course of the show, it is truly a gift.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons I love this show so much, because outside of there being a Spider-Man show like this that I could have watched with my child growing up, like, this is perfect. And that's what this has been for me. So that was mind-boggling, totally freaking awesome when that helmet just clanged across the floor, got spat out by the wormhole.
Yep.
And that's not even the craziest part.
No, because the way that because Reverse Flash is going to kill Barry. Barry is getting beat on. He is at he's at the
and
end.
And he tells him, "I'm going to go kill all these people when you're done.
I'm going to kill you, and then I'm going to kill everybody else. I'm going to go to the jail and kill your father." Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, you hear a gunshot. And the gunshot kind of happens off camera. Everybody's like freaking out.
And you think that he got shot.
Yes,
because you assume that someone shot the Reverse Flash.
The way it happens. And you turn around and Caitlin like gives this blood curling screech. And then you all of a sudden see Eddie. And as the camera kind of pans out, you see that he was holding the gun. He shot the gun, but he shot himself. And he crumbles onto the floor and starts to die. Now, Iris jumps in. You hear Joe screaming, Eddie, what did you do? What have you done? And Iris comes up. And Iris, I mean, this is that moment where you look at both of those actors and think, holy crap, these guys know exactly what they're doing. I mean, this was so well acted all over the place. I was crying for Iris. I was crying for Eddie because all Eddie wanted to be the hero and he wanted to get the girl.
Yep.
And that's all he wanted. And then when the wormhole, he tells Iris he loves her and he explains this whole thing to her. And as the wormhole starts sucking everything out into out of this room into the wormhole, they have to leave his body. And they get out of there and you see his limp body get sucked into the wormhole, which to me right there was the worst thing I've ever seen.
Well, but
because you're just like, that's a guy who just sacrificed himself and see you later, empty shell.
Well, what I immediately thought was that's how the Reverse Flash is coming back.
Yeah, he's going to be back.
He's probably going to be the Reverse Flash when he comes back.
Yes.
Because who knows what's happening now in that. Because you see Eobard Thawne revert to his original form and then disintegrate right before everybody's eyes, which was awesome.
Yep.
Like, that was a comic booky comic book moment right there.
Yeah.
Like, that was pretty, pretty awesome. And then they go outside and the entire world is starting to break apart because this black hole is opening. And then you get to see Hawk Girl.
You see basically the beginning of the trailer.
Which might be the season premiere of The Flash, could be basically the pilot for Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it ends with Barry trying to run up and do the reverse cyclone thing to stop the black hole from activating. But you're seeing flashes of the people that are going to be in Legends of Tomorrow. So, like, that was crazy amazing. And by the time that ended, I mean, for a show that was 45 minutes of buildup, you were breathless by the time that it actually ended. And then it was over.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you're just kind of staring at the TV. Like, waiting Parker for, and I turned for, and looked at each other like, whoa.
When we were kids, because I know everybody has done this. When you were a kid, I could name a TV show and you could tell me how each episode ended.
Right.
Night, Mr. Walters, tick, 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 and the paper gets flipped for the...
Sit, Ubu, sit.
Yep.
Good dog.
All these things. So now with The Flash, when you see the kids all sitting in front of the TV set, you're like, all right, I'm going to get another burst of what's going to happen. And like nothing, it ended. And
you got the creators come on and the creators basically talked about, you know, how awesome season one was and how they can't wait for season two and stuff like that. But man,
your show ended and here you go. And it's like, oh my gosh, I can't wait. I can't wait. I don't know what to do. And that was, that was a 1 hour marathon.
Yep. And then the commercial came on and said they're going to replay all the episodes over the summer.
All
my son and I were like, well, I guess that's what we're watching every Tuesday night for the rest of the summer. So, I hope they do that with season three of Arrow.
Yeah.
Because I will watch the entire season three of Arrow. But man, what a freaking season finale. What a first season of a show. And boy, have they done a good job with The Flash. Like, I cannot wait to see what happens next season. And it's so exciting with what DC is doing with their television universe right now. And I just hope that with all the positive reaction to everything that they're doing with their TV universe.
Yeah.
Like, I just hope that at some point someone says, maybe we should do that with the movies.
Everybody's loving the real positive, character-driven, emotional stuff that's somewhat lighthearted, but kind of can be a little heavy at times. They're liking that. Why don't we do that on the big screen? You're like waiting for the one person in the in the board meeting to say that.
I don't want to see Dark Flash. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, but in any case.
As far as I'm concerned, nobody else can play The Flash.
That's a whole other topic, and I 100% agree, and I understand that the TV guys are never the guys in the movies, but that is ridiculous, because that kid owns The Flash.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing, too, I forgot to mention, which I thought was so cool. My name is Barry Allen is the way he narrates the beginning.
Yep.
And that's the beginning of every episode, and then it goes into what's going on right now. But in this one, it wasn't the same one we've heard from the first episode.
Right.
It was him narrating it in the modern time. And instead of the, you know, whatever, how it normally ends, it was him ending what he was saying as he was talking to Wells.
Right.
So I thought, amazing.
Yeah, good stuff. So we'll be talking much more about that, I'm sure. We're going to take one final break, though, and we're going to come back with your creator spotlight.
For the best in comics, gaming, sports cards, and toys, it's got to be Most Excellent. Providing the best service and coolest stores for almost 20 years, Most Excellent will be the only stop you need for all your needs. Not only is Most Excellent the official local comic shop of the Secret Identity podcast, it's the local shop of those who like service, quality, and no-hassle shopping. So check it all out at www.mostexcellentcomics.weebly.com. And on eBay, it's one word, Most Excellent Collectibles.
And we are back with your creator spotlight. And speaking of a guy who has written The Flash.
Yes.
Mr. Mark Waid, you had a chance to speak with him at New York Comic Fest after I spoke with him at New York Comic Fest. Now, when we talked, I had spoken to him a lot about Thrillbent and the digital comic stuff that he's been doing over on that platform. And then you talked to him about all the stuff that probably everybody that listens to this show wants to hear you talk about. And it's great because you just have a different perspective.
Yeah.
And it's a great conversation. You guys talk a lot about Mark's particular approach to writing heroes. You talk about some of your favorite runs on characters that he's done. And much like when I sat down with him, he's an awesome guy.
Yeah.
Who loves comic books and loves characters and is just someone that you want to continually go out and check out his stuff. And, you know, with him having written The Flash, I would love to hear what he thought of The Flash. Mm. If we get to sit down with him again, I would love to hear, because I know how he felt about like Man of Steel and stuff like that. I would love to hear what he thought about how The Flash was handled for the show and stuff like that. But he's a great guy, and I cannot wait to see what he does with Archie. That is a book I am so excited for and cannot wait to check out. And a great interview that you did with him, and another one that I think we're really proud of, and just great to have him on the show twice now.
Yeah.
So there you go. He is your creator spotlight for this week. That is going to do it for this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew Herring, this is Brian Letenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
And the Creator Spotlight coming to you once again from New York Comic Fest, www.nycomicfest.com. It's where you want to go for information on the show we're at right now, which you've obviously missed. That's why we're going to try to bring it to you.
Right.
And next year's show, because you want to be here. And I am sitting right now in the, I guess, in the presence of greatness, at least as far as I'm concerned.
I prefer August presence. It's good.
There we go. Mr. Mark Waid, how are you?
Good, sir. How are you today?
I am doing well. Now, you talked to my show partner, Brian.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be asking you the dumber of the questions.
Awesome.
Because Brian is up here. I'm a little down here.
No. I believe he described that it was new school and old school. I believe that was the way he was phrasing it.
It's sad to think that 8 years age difference
it
or
makes
6 years.
You old school. I know.
I'm old school. So what I want to talk to you a little bit about is, I think there's been a little bit of a renaissance with you, and that you were one of these guys that when you talk about the heyday of comics in the late 80s, early 90s, your name comes up.
Yeah.
And then when comics kind of took a little bit of a downturn, you seemed to be busy somewhere else doing some other things, kind of behind the scenes. Now you've got Daredevil, you've got Hulk, you've got Thrillbent, you've got Empire coming back out. Yeah. What's going on?
I got bored. No, you know what it is? It's I've been really lucky by the fact that next year will be my 30th year in comics, and I've never had to look for work. I've never had to look for a gig. There's always been something for me to do out there. And again, there's two things you can chalk up this quote-unquote renaissance to. One of them is Steve Wacker, who was my editor at Daredevil, who's also my editor on 52 and my editor at Legion of Superheroes. But once he got at Marvel, he got me aboard some of the Spider-Man stuff. And Steve was one of the best editors I ever worked with.
And a great guy. I had a great interview with him.
Yeah.
And his son, I think it was his son, sat on the lap and kept grabbing the microphone.
Yep. No, he's great. And he sort of knows that the best way to let me do what I do is sort of like put me in a corner, kind of away from continuity a little bit, and let me just have my own little world to play with. So that's a big part of it. And the other part of it is just all the murderer's row of artists I've been able to work with in the last few years. Like, you know, Paolo and Chris Somni and just a ton of guys who are real storytellers.
And you're working with Mark Bagley now on The Incredible Hulk, or The Hulk. I don't even know if it's incredible now.
Straight out, flat out Hulk. Yeah.
But the reason I got it was because you were writing it. And once again, I'm looking at this going, I don't think this guy can do anything wrong.
Oh.
I mean, I haven't had your cooking yet.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I can list the number of people who would beg to differ. But But I, you know, I think I like to believe that I mean, I really try. So that I like to believe that even on my bad days, there's sort of like a level of craft beneath which I hope I don't sink, you know?
Yeah.
But again, a lot of it just comes back to, again, I've been living with these characters in my head since I was a boy. You know, I've been thinking about these characters since I was a kid. And a big part of it is always approaching it from the point of view of, okay, what is, how do you see the world if you're the Hulk? How do you see the world if you're Daredevil? How is your world different? How is your perspective of the world different than mine because of your superpowers, your abilities, or whatever? And I like writing about, my friend Tom Pyre says it's the superhuman condition. I mean, yeah. I write about the superhuman condition.
Yeah, and you kind of got into my next question. I've always described you as somebody that was a 4, 5, 6-year-old kid playing with your Mego action figures, creating all these adventures, and you have at least 10, 15, 20 storylines for every single character for something like that. And I don't know if I'm right on that, but that is always what I've gotten from you, where I've always thought, this is a guy I can relate to because he's just like I am.
That's just it. I think it comes from two different places. It comes from that. It comes from the, you know, the idea that I've been living with these characters since I was 6 and thinking about them every day, and I know them better than I know my own family. And I think part of it, too, is that I sort of found, unintentionally, but I found my niche, which is I don't start with a big villain first. I don't start with the big threat to the world first. And therefore, and by that nature, a lot of my stories aren't terribly huge and sprawling that way. But what I think I do, that I, you know, whether I do it well or not is your call. But I know consistently what I do is that idea of I start with a hero, and I start what, whenever I take on an assignment, my first questions with a character are, what does he want? Why does he do what he do? What he does? And what's the worst thing that could happen to this character? Like, and what, you know, what would just absolutely devastate this character and destroy that character? And it's not because I don't like the character; it's because you really got it. That helps you know what motivates them
to tear them down to build them back up.
Yeah, exactly. Like when I took over Captain America, my first thought was, you know, you have him banished from the country. You know, you have him exiled from America. That would be the worst thing that can happen to Steve Rogers. So we got that story, and I was very happy with the way that came out.
And I'll tell you right now, that was my next year. We're on the same wavelength, because my next question was, or my comment was, I read Captain America religiously from Jack Kirby's retake on it, like 194, 193, around there, the Mad Bomb, all that stuff, up until maybe 240, 250, and then completely fell away.
Yeah.
Came back when you started on that, to me, that is the definitive Cap run. But that's the run that got me back into loving Captain America again.
That's great.
So when you were talking about that, because I remember reading it going, oh, my gosh, Sharon's back, and he can't go into the country anymore, and all this stuff. So, wow.
Thank you.
I don't even know what to say about that anymore.
No, but that's very kind. Thank you. Again, that's the whole, you know, you get in there, and you really, you have to invest in these characters, which is a dangerous, admittedly, it's a dangerous place to be, because they're not yours.
Yeah.
They're not your toys, and at any moment, somebody can come along and go, you know, somebody else should be doing this gig, or we don't want you doing this, or whatever. But for the time being, I've been very lucky, and I don't know any other way to do it, except to just really invest and really care and really give my best to these characters, because they were very good to me when I was a kid, and this is a chance to give back.
Yeah, I've rated your story arc as probably the second or third greatest of any Cap story of all time, and that's going back to, you know, the very beginning, and that's a lot of stuff. You and it's Andy or Adam Hubert.
Oh, Andy.
Andy. You and Andy, I think I interviewed Adam and called him Andy a couple times and done the same thing the other way. Left Cap to go to Kazar.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, this is garbage. Yeah. Why is he doing this?
Oh,
this character sucks.
I was with you. Because Andy's like, I got to leave. I want to do Kazar. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I don't want to. Kazar's the least interesting character in the Marvel Universe to me. I don't want to do Kazar for anything in the world. But he was adamant. I'm like, all right, but my love for working with Andy outweighed that. So I did what I always do. You go back and you really think about the character and you figure out what your own personal hook is and what your personal connection to that character is, and then build out from there.
And 11, I think it was at least 11 or 12 issues that you guys did
that
were, again, perfect. An incredible run.
Thank you. I was really proud of that, because the question became, right off the bat, why is he not Tarzan? And once you get to that, the key answer to that is, Tarzan was an infant when he was adopted by the apes. You know, Kazar was already an adolescent kid. He knew what McDonald's was.
Yeah.
You know, he knew what baseball was. He knew he had a life when he was adopted by the apes, an orphan in the jungle. And so there's got to be a little part of him, a little tiny nostalgic part of him that misses ice cream.
Yeah.
You know, and it misses Walkmans or misses CDs and or however you want to slide the scale, the you know, the scale of Marvel time. And that's, you know, that just gave me something to work with.
And the last two things, because now you got a couple, you know, some people coming in to get signatures, and I don't want to be that guy, but I end up will be. The before we talk about one of my things, but Kingdom Come.
Yeah.
I remember reading that going, that's his Sergeant Pepper. That is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's all over for him, and he's never going to be able to write the same again. I was way off on that one, too.
Thank God. Yeah, that would have been kind of crippling if that had been like, ah, oh, it's your Citizen Kane, and now you're going to just, you know, grow fat and old and sell wine. That would have been an awful, awful way to go out of my career. And it's still the thing that most people bring up at conventions and stuff. But I still, it's not, and this is in no way to denigrate it, but it's not my favorite thing I ever wrote.
Yeah.
I'm happy with it. I'm glad of what we did. But it doesn't have much humor in it.
Yep.
It doesn't have, you know, it's very portentous looking back. It's very sort of, you know, full of gravitas and stuff. And I think I've blossomed some.
Oh, yeah. And the final thing, too, that we have to talk about, Empire.
Yes.
I interviewed Barry Kitson in Boston last year, and it was a 2 or 3 year waiting every time I try to get to him. And the way Barry is he sits down and does sketches, and he is just locked.
Yeah.
I could not have asked for a better interview, a great guy, but the one thing I took out of it, other than the fact that he loves Empire and was so excited, but he couldn't tell me it was coming back, but told me it was coming back.
Yeah.
Do you know how the British got into comic books? This is the one bit of nugget I took from him.
No, I don't know why.
They got into them because the Americans' boats used to use comic books as cheap ballasts.
Ah, that's right. Yeah, okay, yeah.
And he told me that, and we sat there and talked about that for the next 10, 15 minutes, forgetting that he did Legion of Superheroes and all this other great stuff.
Yeah.
So a great guy who also just pushed you to death, saying what a great guy you were. And
likewise, Barry is just the best collaborator and an amazing storyteller, and we've been wanting to do Empire Volume 2 for some time, but it wasn't until all the stars got into alignment, we got the rights back from DC, and so now we're good to go on Thrillbent. So come subscribe.
It's because I am going to, I don't read webcomics or anything online, but I will because I need to get that.
Thank you.
So I'm that target audience that you were working at.
Yeah.
You read Empire now. If you gave Empire to somebody now, they'd say, yeah, this is everything else that's out there. You guys started that.
I look back on it. I'm uncomfortable saying that, but I'll let you say it.
I just did. You started that.
There's something I look now and I look at Sopranos and Breaking Bad and this whole rise of the anti-hero. Hero as a protagonist, and I think, man, we were there at the early days of that, and it's kind of interesting to see all that stuff now and go, yeah, we were a little ahead of our time.
Yeah, well, I'm going to let you go because you got the line, and also be able to, Brian and I will both be able to scratch you off our short list of interviews. Now I just got Mr. T. He's the only guy left that I really want to interview, but
I pity you.
Yeah, so thank you so much for joining us. Continued success, and just have a great time at the show.
Thank you so much, sir.
And so ends yet another Creator Spotlight. So on behalf of our guest, the mightily awesome Mr. Mark Waid, this is the Matt Man. Have yourself a good one till we talk again soon.